Hello, welcome to your favorite bookish podcast, Fully Booked and Caffeinated. I'm Kelsey.
And I'm Heather.
And today we will be discussing and reviewing A Botanical Daughter by Noah Medlock. As usual, let's talk about our fuel for this discussion. What are you drinking, Heather?
Currently drinking some water, but this morning I had a caramel cold brew from Dunkin'.
Okay.
That was pretty delicious with the cold foam.
Love it. The whole
nine. Everything going on there. Okay. But I think that they up their prices. Because when I the price came up, I was like, that seems a little bit more expensive than what I've been paying. But I couldn't tell.
I mean, inflation is hitting us everywhere.
I know. So I was like, ugh. But yeah. So
I don't even want to tell you how much I spent on bagels and cream cheese this past weekend. I was like.
No, I don't want to know.
Well, I'm drinking a Coke Zero, but I have been working from Starbucks the past few days, and now that's a way to get your money's worth of coffee.
That's true.
So I've been going with a classic iced coffee with oat milk and cinnamon syrup in a For Here cup, and bring on those free refills.
Oh, they do that?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that. Is it just coffee? So
it's iced coffee, hot coffee, iced tea, and hot tea.
Wow. I didn't know that.
So it's very nice because I just sat there for hours and barely stood, didn't drink any water, and had a lot of coffee. So I'm doing great.
You sound like me at work every day.
Pretty much.
Pretty much.
Wow, could I bring my walking pad to Starbucks? Because.
Right.
Oh, I'm fusing with the chair. Oh, speaking of, when someone sits down and fuses with the surface they're sitting on. We'll get to it. Anywho, cheers.
Cheers.
Just can't wait to start talking about this book. Okay, so Noah Medlock is a new author, and I pulled this straight from his website because I like it. It says, "Hello, humans. I'm Noah Medlock, and I write weird fiction. That's science fiction and fantasy with a taste of the macabre. I'm interested in decentering the genre, focusing on queer characters, and treating soft sciences with hard sci-fi rigor." So, obviously, my first thought when I was reading this book is that this man has to be a botanist or something, because there are so many insane plant terms that I could never pronounce. And so I did a little digging, and he once worked as a horticultural advisor at a garden center. I'm not sure how he got that job or what qualifications you need to get that job, but okay. And also he plays the piano and the trombone, so that explains the music portion of this book.
Okay.
And I guess that the taxidermy aspects were through diligent research.
Could be.
So this book was published in March 2024. It's Noah Medlock's debut novel, of course. And there's nothing else to say about it. So.
And scene.
That's it. So here is our book summary from the book's website. It's a long one, so stick with me.
Okay.
Mexican Gothic meets The Lie Tree by way of Oscar Wilde and Mary Shelley in this delightfully witty horror debut. A captivating tale of two Victorian gentlemen hiding their relationship away in a botanical garden who embark on a Frankenstein-style experiment with unexpected consequences. It is an unusual thing to live in a botanical garden, but Simon and Gregor are an unusual pair of gentlemen. Hidden away in their glass sanctuary from the disapproving tattle of Victorian London, they are free to follow their own interests without interference. For Simon, this means long hours in the dark basement workshop, working his taxidermical art. Gregor's business is exotic plants, lucrative but harmless enough. Until his latest acquisition, a strange fungus which shows signs of intellect beyond any plant he's seen, inspires him to attempt a masterwork, true intelligent life from plant matter. Driven by the glory he'll earn from the Royal Horticultural Society for such an achievement, Gregor ignores the flaws in his plan, that intelligence cannot be controlled, that plants cannot be reasoned with, and that the only way his plant beast will flourish is if he uses a recently deceased corpse for the substrate. The experiment, or Chloe, as she is named, outstrips even Gregor's expectations, entangling their strange household. But as Gregor's experiment flourishes, he wilts under the cost of keeping it hidden from jealous eyes. The mycelium grows apace in this sultry greenhouse, but who is cultivating whom? Told with wit and warmth, this is an extraordinary tale of family, fungus, and more than a dash of bloody revenge from an exciting new voice in queer horror.
Wow.
Wow.
Good job. Good job.
That really told everything, didn't it? Well, not everything.
No, it did not.
We will get to everything. So between this description and the cover of the book, I was so excited to read this. And, you know, I stayed with the theme of romance for Valentine's.
Uh-huh.
And I added my own little spin by choosing a horror novel.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see how that worked out for us. Right away, we're introduced to our main characters, Simon and Gregor. Simon is a taxidermist and is obviously neurodivergent.
Yeah. 100%.
Gregor is a botanist and he is obviously very skilled at his job because they live in a literal greenhouse.
The amount of stress that I would have living... The bugs. There has to be so many bugs.
They never mention the bugs, but it is a massive functioning greenhouse. They don't even have walls. They just have plants arranged in a way that they weave together to form walls.
Mm-hmm. It's chaotic.
It's insane. And it's really humid and balmy in there because all the plants are like jungle plants.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It sounds like my worst nightmare, but okay. And of course, these men are gay and in a relationship, but it's the 1800s. So it's a big secret. They also keep their work and their workspaces very separate because they're both independent, even though they're together, which honestly is my dream type of relationship. So, right at the start, Simon hires Jennifer Finch as a housekeeper, which is a big event because they've never had a housekeeper, nor also, do they need one.
I was just going to say, what house is to be kept? Like, there's nothing for them. The amount of stress that I would have having this job, how do you clean a house that's essentially a greenhouse?
Yeah, and at first she's not even allowed to touch or... tend to the plants at all.
Yeah.
Until Gregor starts to trust her a little bit. But she does actually have a lot of cleaning because Gregor is a slob and she needs to
clean up after him. There was like 25 coffee mugs.
Yeah. She's like, there is so much mold in here that I had to throw away the mug, which honestly, same. I would do this.
Mm-hmm.
So Simon buys game from Jennifer's dad for his taxidermy. And the dad basically begs Simon to give her a job.
Mm-hmm.
And Simon is just like, okay.
Simon's definitely a little bit of a pushover.
Absolutely. So Jennifer's going through a tough time because her friend, lover, died by suicide, and it's obviously very hard for her. Mostly because she doesn't think that Constance actually died by suicide. And in this time, if you died by suicide, you couldn't be buried in a cemetery. So she's buried under a random tree, just like in a pile of dirt. Like right on the side of the road, which is so horrible. So meanwhile, Gregor is always chasing his next mind-blowing experiment, and he decides he wants to create a conscious being. So it has to have reaction to external stimuli, flow of information through the organism, demonstrable self-awareness, and there's a lot of discussion about a soul, but basically Gregor envisions himself as creating the AI version of plant life.
Realistic, yeah. That's like the best way to put it.
And I don't like AI in any aspect, and apparently not in plant life either.
Uh-uh.
So, of course, the next logical step, since they need a host or flower bed of sorts, Gregor recruits Simon, and they go to dig up Jennifer's friend/lover's body from her makeshift grave under a tree.
Huh.
Most notably, they see that Jennifer's hunch that Constance didn't die by suicide is right.
Yeah.
There's a stab wound in her abdomen, and the rope burns around her neck were from after her death. They were postmortem.
So, like, who killed her? Was it the dad?
We never find out definitively.
I know, because, like, I wasn't getting vibes that it was the dad.
I think it was the dad. Because who else would it be?
I know.
And the dad sucked.
I know. I don't know. I was so torn about who, because I know that's like an open-ended question that we don't get any closure on. I don't know.
Yeah, and I didn't realize till the end. I was like, oh, wait.
Yeah, you never find out what happened.
And, well, we'll get to it about why Gregor thinks it was definitely the dad. Anyway, so we get this message that Jennifer and Constance had this forbidden love, and Constance ended up being murdered because of it. So not only are we hearing again about this secrecy, but now it's escalating into literally losing her life over it.
Yeah.
So back to the absolutely unhinged behavior of these weirdos. Simon is a very skilled taxidermist. He does the weirdest and best thing. Whenever he's upset about something, he takes the corresponding organ out of an animal and puts it in a jar. I love this. So, for example, he took the stomach out of an animal when his stomach turned, and a brain out when he couldn't get something off his mind.
Mm-hmm.
Very literal, and I loved it.
Yeah, I did like that little aspect.
But anyway, that's why Gregor gets Simon looped into this whole mess, because Gregor has got the plant stuff handled, but he needs Simon's attention to detail and craftsmanship to get all the parts of the human body working for the plant body. Slowly, the plant starts taking over the host body and taking on the appearance of a girl, so they call her Chloe. And this is where I realize I don't know shit about plants, because they are making it seem like some of this movement and whatnot is normal.
Yeah, I know.
But Chloe starts moving a lot, mostly by imitating or copying. But before long, she's walking around the greenhouse.
Yeah.
And causing havoc.
You know, like I thought of like Groot from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
basically
I was how getting I those vibes it. Too.
Mm-hmm.
Jenny stumbles upon Chloe, and Chloe almost drowns Jenny in their little man-made lake. Mm-hmm. So, of course, Gregor panics that Jenny won't keep this insane secret and offers her a live-in position, basically babysitting Chloe, who is gallivanting around. Whenever Chloe is in one spot for too long, she starts to fuse to whatever surface or anything near her. Basically, ivy on steroids.
Yeah.
And yeah, Jenny quickly gets used to the fact that there's a plant walking around.
Which, like, if you were to ask me to now take care of the thing that tried to murder me and be chill about it, Jenny's a better woman than I.
Listen, I won't be addressing any questions at this time. So one day, Jenny ventures off to visit Constance's grave and finds a locket that she'd given to Constance that she was buried with, and it's outside the grave in the weeds. So she digs up the very shallow grave, which this is also what kind of made me believe that it was the dad, because he couldn't even dig her a real grave. Like, he just fucking sucked. So she sees that Connie's body is missing. Of course, she's very distressed, understandably. And she blames Connie's father. Don't remember his name, nor do I care, because as I said, he sucks. But Gregor is becoming attached to Jenny and also needs to cover up his tracks, since he is the reason Connie's body is gone. But he decides to blame it on the father and dispose of said problem. He invites the dad to Grimfern, and...
Which I love that name, by the way.
Oh my gosh, I know. I do love this whole vibe of where they're living.
Yeah.
Like, it's very descriptive and atmospheric, and I like it. So while there, the plan is kind of hazy, because Gregor can't handle this angry man who carries a gun. And, like, it's kind of unclear what his plan really is. So Chloe decides to take it into her own hands. She's a plant. Anyway, she ends up killing the man. And Gregor loses his shit, understandably.
Yeah.
But it's hard, because he's going back and forth between this is my wonderful creation and this is an unruly, uncontrollable monster. Meanwhile, Simon is not vacillating back and forth. He believes that this plant girl is their chance to finally have what so many other couples take for granted, a daughter.
Which is, like, so funny, because Simon was, like, so against this from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, him and throughout throughout the book, like, him and Gregor just kind of shift positions on the entire thing.
Yeah, he's definitely so opposed to it on a moral standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think a lot of it has to do with the fact that Simon doesn't get a lot of reassurance or affection or love from Gregor.
Mm-hmm.
And so he kind of latches on to this child and finds something to kind of funnel all of his love into.
Mm-hmm.
So he takes his role in fatherhood very seriously. And as Gregor struggles with his feelings, Simon does a little trickery to ensure that he doesn't give up on their girl and kind of convinces him to keep striving higher and higher. So the next step is to figure out a way for Chloe to speak. I don't know. Once again, no more questions at this time. So they do it. They sew or weave some pipe instruments into Chloe's plant body, and she starts singing and talking and yelling, and how is this creature still a plant?
Oh my God, I know. I know.
By now, Jennifer and Simon are both very, very attached to Chloe. Mm-hmm. Chloe is actually calling them father and pother, which is so adorable, but also it's a plant. But Gregor is still terrified of his own creation. He says, "I am not your father. I am your maker, your cultivator, your inventor. I conceived you not of body, but of mind. You are not my child. You are my greatest success and my gravest error. You are my monster." So we're obviously getting this Frankenstein's monster comparison. And Jennifer and Simon will not be dissuaded. They devise a plan to get Chloe outside because she wants to go outside. I don't know, because she can ask for things because she's a fucking plant.
She can ask for things now.
And there's a tussle when Gregor finds them after literally sneaking outside. And he's losing his marbles with all of this stress. He shoves Jennifer and somehow gets stabbed in the process. And, like, why is he so mean to Jennifer?
I don't know.
He's so mean to her.
I know.
Even when she was trying to distract him. And he's just, like, calling her stupid. And he's like, mm-hmm. The reason why you're here is because you're too dumb to understand what's going on.
Yeah. I feel like he just got also progressively meaner throughout as the book wore on as well. Like, his entire character arc went in a direction that I was not expecting.
But yeah. I mean, it's giving Amityville Horror, where the house is turning him angry and mean and crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And all along, we know that Gregor is kind of a floozy, which I don't like because Simon deserves better. But he alludes to all types of relationships. And there's a correspondence going with a past lover throughout the whole book. His name is Julian, and he's the new head of the Horticultural Society. So basically, they're going back and forth the whole book, and Julian wants to see what Gregor's working on, but all of their letters are kind of filled with this, with, like, sexual innuendos, yeah. And Gregor is obviously doesn't want anyone to come and see his creation because she's uncontrollable. But finally, Gregor caves because he's desperate, and he invites Julian over. So when Julian tries to force himself on Gregor sexually, Chloe pops in to defend her dad. Finally, Gregor realizes that all along, Chloe was being protective, not just vengeful for no reason.
Yeah.
So this is why Gregor thought for sure that Constance's dad was guilty, because he was like, oh, the spirit of Constance forced Chloe to kill her dad because he was responsible for her death.
Uh-huh.
When really, he was just a threat to her father or father, I can't remember which one's which. And so Chloe had to protect her dad because he's a loony bin. Exactly. So Chloe rips Julian's face off.
Yeah, that was.
And Gregor has to finish the job by cutting his throat with pruning shears. And then he lays next to Julian as he bleeds out. Okay. After that, we skip to Jennifer finding Chloe shoved in the boiler. I don't know. We just skip to this whole part. We don't know when it happens. Whatever. So they decide to escape. The men realize that Jennifer is in love with Chloe. And the feeling is mutual.
Mm-hmm.
And Simon is happy about it for some weird reason.
Yeah.
Because he's like, Gregor, why don't you understand? We have what people would consider forbidden love. And we know that it's real. So why is their forbidden love any different? Mm-hmm. And Gregor is like, I'm sorry, what the fuck? And Simon is barely recognizable to Gregor because he's mm-hmm. actually expressing himself. He's being defiant. He's being decisive. He's telling Gregor what to do. And Gregor does not like that one bit. So yeah, back to Jennifer and Chloe. They escape because they're in love and they make out, which sounds super weird, right? Because one of them is a human girl and one of them is a plant. But then you keep reading and they fuck. Jennifer and the plant girl. Is there a word for people fucking plants? There is. It's called dendrophilia, and I'm probably on a watch list now because I Googled that.
You probably are on a watch list now.
And we were talking about before we started recording, the the sexual encounter only takes place over about 2 or 3 pages.
Yeah.
It's 2 or 3 pages too long.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly it's just symbolic for Chloe.
Until Jenny finds her plant clitoris.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yes.
As she's being filled in all of her holes with some roots.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's literally what happens.
That's literally what happens. Mm-hmm. Until, see, it was very, like, just, you know, her dirt and her vines and all that stuff until the clitoris.
Until
yes.
it wasn't.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Until Jenny was like, wow, I am being pleasured. I also need to pleasure my plant girlfriend, who's also her weird plant sister, because they had this little plant family. Anyway, so when Simon and Gregor finally show up with Jennifer's dad, Chloe has expanded since she was outgrowing her measly little girl body, and now she's taken over Jennifer's body and killed her in the process. But I mean, at least Jennifer died happy and orgasming.
I mean, that's one way to look at it.
It's really not a bad way to go.
No, you know? It's truly not.
Understandably, Jennifer's dad is like, what the actual fuck? And he loads his rifle to shoot Chloe, but Simon steps in to defend his daughter, and he slits John Finch's throat. So that's death number 4 attributed to Chloe's existence, although I guess we could say 4.5, since Constance was already dead but did contribute to the plant.
Yeah.
And our story ends with Gregor building a special greenhouse just for Chloe, where she can spread out and keep her plant mechanisms going. Gregor hosts an exhibition event to show everyone the beautiful creature he has created, and that's the end. So just some initial questions. Where did these men get all of their money?
Oh, I know. That's actually a wonderful question.
And since Chloe can literally kill people, why are we not concerned about her breaking out of the greenhouse? The glass greenhouse? She ripped a man's face off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, don't get me wrong. I love the idea of queer romance and horror being put together.
I agree.
And on that note, I was very happy that we have a man writing gay men.
Mm-hmm.
But. This has taken my male author writing female characters' hatred to a new level. This man wrote about 2 female characters, or 1.5, it's up for debate, and their story arc ends with a woman fucking a plant.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, part of me wonders if the whole point of that is that, because not really like alluded to, but if Jennifer knew on some level that Chloe was Constance.
Yes. Okay. So at the end, we do get this kind of connection because Chloe says some saying
that
Constance and Jenny used to have. And
so there's no way that she would know. Which then it makes you wonder, like, how would plant Chloe even know that, because Jennifer never said it. So then it makes you wonder if there's the mycelium being put into Constance kind of reincarnated her.
Mm-hmm.
And then that would kind of like make more sense to me, but it's never really addressed if that's mm-hmm. like what happened. So it's kind of up to like the reader's interpretation. But I almost wish that there was more about that.
Yeah, I agree, like, because it brings us back to that soul conversation. And like you said, reincarnation. And normally I understand why a book kind of leaves that up to the imagination, but for everything else, they don't leave it up to the imagination.
No.
So it's not consistent.
No, and it's like, I don't know. Like, I can understand and see where the author was trying to take that story, but it really was poorly done.
Yeah, because I was also waiting for, as soon as they take Constance's body and Jenny is working there, you know, like you're waiting for Jenny to find out what they've done, and they desecrated her friend's corpse, her lover's corpse, and to absolutely lose her mind. But she never actually finds it out. And at the end, instead of it feeling like she realized what was happening, it felt more like she was so delirious with love that she was kind of like placing that expectation on Chloe.
Yeah, he almost kind of makes the women stupid.
Why would a male author ever do that, Heather?
Yeah, it's kind of like not realistic. They're making it seem like Jennifer, who I feel like from the jump translates or comes across as this very smart woman,
who is kind definitely street smart for sure.
Yeah, who's kind of not taken seriously because of her upbringing. And then, you know, because even the stuff that she's doing around the house, like, you know, she's eavesdropping, she's obsessed with plants and everything. And it's like, she's obviously has a brain and she's smart. So what about this plant entity makes her become so vapid, like, and just not, and like unable to decipher what's going on? Like,
that's a really good point.
You know,
Because I totally get why she originally, you know, started working there, and then why she stayed there. And then she kind of says, you know, I never fit in anywhere else. And now I know that I have this queerness in common with these people. And also, you know, maybe I'm meant to live in this little forest with them, and this could be my great life. So she has all of these, like, this deductive reasoning, and like you said, the eavesdrop, like, she knows what she's doing and she has a lot of street smarts. She's just very misunderstood. And then by the end, she's fucking a plant. I mean, I don't know.
I know.
Else can I say it?
I understood her wanting to running away with Chloe and like maybe like trying to like break her free, because it's so, like, my whole thought process was like, okay, Jennifer is leaving with Chloe because she wants Chloe to live the life that she wants to live. She wants her to be free.
Mm-hmm.
So I get it. And then like they share a kiss and I'm like, all right, like whatever. Like that's, it is what it is. I understand they're trying to like make this romance happen. Jenny's found like she's reunited with her lost love. But then it just like totally takes like a turn that I was not expecting. There was no trigger warnings.
I can't believe you weren't expecting plant sex. That's
like literally, I was like,
did you see the flowers on the cover?
Oh my God. I was like, what am I reading? I was like, what is, and I'm like, this is supposed to be a horror. I was a horror film, a horror novel, not some monster porn book.
I mean, it was horrifying. That's a fact.
Yes. True.
All right. So pause for a second, because we're going to get back to that.
Okay.
All right. So what did you think of the relationship between Gregor and Simon?
It infuriated me half of the time because, I don't know. Again, I feel like there was so much potential for their relationship, and it could be the way that this author's writing style is, because I wasn't a huge fan of that. And I feel like there was so much minutia about the science and the plant that made it hard to connect to either character. And it just seemed like Gregor was kind of an asshole and Simon was just like this meek man that just kind of put up with it. And I didn't love that. Like, there was really no actual substance to their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. You know, because then it's just like Gregor, like at the beginning, Gregor's just kind of forcing Simon's hand to do things that Simon doesn't want to do. So right there, there's no compromise in the relationship. It's kind of like what Gregor says Simon has to do.
And then we're like just supposed to believe that they're in love because they tell us they are.
Yeah, like there's never really... show us. There's no moments. Yeah, there's no moments of love. And then it's just like you get these moments of like Gregor being basically a big asshole. And he's like just like in like this big mood for a very long period of time. And Simon's just kind of like tiptoeing around it and not trying to like address the situation. And I'm just like, okay.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Well, it brings me to our next question, which... Did you like or dislike our main characters? So we have Gregor, Simon, Jennifer, and Chloe. And I like everyone except Gregor, basically. And I understand why he is the way he is. He lives completely separated from society, so he doesn't have to abide by these social guidelines or follow social cues.
And it kind of seems like he was, what's the word I'm looking for? Casted out. Mm-hmm. Of the society that he was a part of. Mm-hmm. So I can understand also why he's the way that he is and why he's kind of become a recluse. Mm-hmm. Because he was part of this horticultural society that seems to have been like a big thing for him and meant a lot to him. And then he kind of got ridiculed. And so now he's holed up in this house because he wants to create the next... He wants to create the next great invention or organism that will bring him back into that society.
Mm-hmm. And he lives on this property where his parents used to live, and this fire destroyed their entire lives, and mm-hmm. basically lives with the ghosts.
Yeah.
And but through all that, Simon accepts him for who he is and enables him. But I just didn't like how Gregor treated Jennifer mm-hmm. and Simon, and how he basically created this thing that they grew attached to, and then he got mad at them for being attached to it.
Yeah, like, he almost wanted to, like, rip it away from them.
Mm-hmm.
Like
it was supposed to be his thing.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I like Jennifer for the reasons we already talked about, that she was kind of misunderstood, and she was true to herself and her feelings for Constance, and she was just doing the best she could with the cards that she was dealt. And I like Chloe because it's not her fault. She didn't ask to be brought into this world, and she's so loving, and she plays music, and she sings. And
I was like, I know, because it was also hard to try to envision what Chloe realistically looked like. Because mm-hmm. then if you look at like the cover of the novel, it is a female form with different plants and flowers growing out of her. So then I'm wondering, I'm like, well, is that kind of like, did Chloe present as human form with, you know, the plants growing out of her? But then it's kind of like, they're making it sound like the fingers were like, you know what I thought of? I thought of like algae in like the water. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like the green, or like seaweed. Like, mm-hmm. cause they're like,
oh, I was kind of thinking like seaweed.
Yeah, like her fingers are like dancing, and I'm just like, but are they fingers or are they plants? Like, so.
Yeah, and then she has the rib cage and the breastbone and the sternum and stuff, but then inside she has plants. So yeah. She does still have the form, but then she can stretch and she gets really long and really tall, and she can stretch her arms out and stretch her legs out, and she's strong enough to pick Jennifer up. I don't know. Anyway. So that being said, though, I would actually love to see this as a movie.
Oh my God.
Because just like, well, first of all, the whole atmosphere of the greenhouse sounds amazing. Chloe as the plant girl, and just them trying to control her. And I just think it would be an awesome B-list horror movie. Oh, like 100%. Straight to Netflix.
Yeah.
I would love it.
I agree with that completely.
So, most important question. How would you have rewritten this ghastly ending?
Rewritten it?
Yes. What would you have changed besides the fucking? You kind of started to get into it before.
Yeah, I mean, I would rather Jennifer and Chloe, like, running off and, like, beginning and escaping. And then Gregor and Simon kind of being like, well, that failed.
Guess we'll just lay low until the world discovers her.
Yeah, I don't even know how I'd want this book to end, if I'm being completely honest, because I don't know where it was going.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I kind of felt like there was real no trajectory of the novel. It was just kind of like this idea, and then the idea grew more ideas, and then more ideas. But there was never really any true path.
It's almost as if you're saying the novel was like Chloe.
Oh.
And just kept
growing
off in directions that no one expected.
No. Yeah.
Personally, I would have continued with Chloe getting close to Jennifer and using her body as a host.
Yeah.
Because it's this like powerful message about Jennifer loving something so much that it destroys her, and the power of trust with this family. But I would have skipped over the kissing, the sex, anything remotely romantic. They could have just been sisters and we could have called it a day.
Yeah.
Because they're alluding to that the whole time, where Simon and Gregor, when Gregor actually likes Chloe as their daughter, and they're like, look, we have this little family. Jennifer is our human daughter, and Chloe is our plant daughter, and we have this adorable little family just living in our greenhouse. And then Gregor starts to lose his damn mind, so it all goes down from there. What did I miss? Okay, what do you think about, because you kind of mentioned it before, about this being a horror novel?
It didn't come across as horror to me, like, at all. Like, okay, there was a couple gory scenes where two dudes were murdered viciously, but even those scenes of the death weren't even... I expected more from it, I think. I mean, because, like, we read, like, the September House, and, like, the horror in that and the gore in that was so much more pronounced and made more sense. And, like, I understood the concept of Chloe murdering the dad.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think how that came across to me was, like, I agree with the protection against, because, like, she's trying to protect her new family. Mm-hmm. But I also think, like, part of me thinks that there's still a part of Constance in Chloe. Mm-hmm. So then her killing her dad makes sense. The same thing with, like, killing the ex guy, Jeremy, or whatever the fuck his
Julian.
Name is. Julian. Same thing. Like, killing him because, like, she sees... It's almost like she gets pissed because, like, Daddy Gregor is cheating on Daddy Simon.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, who the fuck?
But Gregor was pushing him off and trying not to.
I know.
So I feel like she saw that and was like, yeah. Don't worry. Don't worry, Daddy Gregor.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, there's definitely horror aspects to it, but I don't know that I would, like, quantify this as, like, a full-blown horror.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't even know, like, what I would categorize it as.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely...
I guess just, like, fantasy?
Yeah, I would say fantasy or like, creature feature.
Creature, okay, yeah.
Because this is a kind of creature. I agree, I don't think the horror elements were enough to make this a horror novel. I do think it was definitely more sci-fi. And I would have liked more horror in it, for sure, because
I was kind of looking forward to it. I was like, you know, because just because, like, we've been reading some horror novels on here, and I'm interested in, like, reading more of the genre. Mm-hmm. So I was looking forward to this.
And also, you know, as we're getting to know Chloe, and she's getting more and more uncontrollable and unpredictable, you're thinking of all the different ways this could backfire. And it really doesn't.
Because there's even that part where, like, they're outside and she becomes part of, like, the picnic blanket and the ground underneath. I was kind of waiting for, like, this big kind of scene to happen where she gets pissed that Gregor's trying to take her away. And I almost wanted her to, like, lift up one of her big arms and, like, you know, cast him across the yard. But, like, that just doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I definitely think there was potential. I think this whole book had potential, because I thought it was fun until it wasn't. All right, let's get to our ratings. I was gonna make this really weird, but we already talked enough about the mossy clitoris. Anyway, so our rating scale is mushrooms.
There were a lot of talk about mushrooms, which makes sense because it's a fungus.
So how many mushrooms did you give A Botanical Daughter?
Two. Yeah.
Yeah. Understandable. I was at three until the plant sex. That really, really set me off. And I think it, like I said, it had a lot of potential. I really loved the descriptive, I don't know if it was necessarily his writing, but the subject matter that he's writing about, like all the plants, not the, the scientific talk, but describing where they lived, like mm-hmm. how their bathroom was, the loft that Jennifer lived in, the different flowers and stuff, like just trying to picture it and stuff, I thought was awesome. And like I said, I would love to see this as a movie, but yeah, I'm just a little put off by the two female characters being reduced to, like you said, very vapid and fucking.
Like, I actually didn't even think about it that way until you brought it up, like how much he diminished the women of the book.
Yeah, as soon as I thought about it, because I was like reading his bio and stuff, and I was like, oh, a male author. And then I was like, oh, God. Like, why did we do this? Yeah, so, I mean, TBD, if I would read another one of his books, it would have to really sound good. And yeah. I don't think I'd want to read another one about plants, gonna be honest with you.
But then I, like, almost get where, like, I almost wonder if that's, like, a kink of his, and he's gonna throw in, like, crazy sexual scenarios into his books.
Oh my god, allegedly, Heather. Did you just say that this author fucks plants?
No.
Yeah, that would be horrible. That would be a horrible thing to say.
Saying that maybe he like thinks like these quirky, not even how to call it quirky, but just like these, oh god, there's like a word I'm thinking of that I can't think of right
next
now.
It's gonna be someone like fucking the piano or something in the next that's book, like,
yeah
I wouldn't be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be less weird anyway. Okay, anything else you want to add?
No. Listen. I told you, like, I did skim because then it got to the point that there was just so much plant talk and information that, again, I think if I like had an interest in plants, this would be fun.
Oh, 100%.
But I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a green thumb, nor do I care about taxidermy.
I would have been interested in more taxidermy, personally.
Of course, because that's you. You're the macabre. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, so it was kind of, I just was like, oh my god. Like, there would be, like, full-blown pages mm-hmm. of just, like.
Like, his journal entries. I'm like, I don't know half these words.
Yeah. So I will admit that I did not read every single word of this book, and I did skim.
But it just needs a better balance.
But I finished it, because I wanted to DNF pretty early on. But I was like, I can't not finish a podcast book, because what would that make me?
Dude, it took me, like, a week and a half. When has it ever taken me a week and a half to read a book?
It doesn't. It took me like 3 weeks. It was, I had to keep renewing it on my Libby because I was
it was a pretty rough one.
I was ahead. I was so ahead with our pod books.
Mm-hmm.
And then this one fucked me.
Me too. This one I literally finished so today. Listen, I've got to get started on the next one because
Dinner for Vampires.
I know. Okay. Yes, that's coming up on my Libby soon. Okay. So next month will be better, everybody. So if you stuck with us this long, thank you.
We hope you like plant porn. If not,
we hope you don't, actually. All right, that's all we have for you today. And it was a lot, so you're welcome. If you like what you heard, please make sure to follow, subscribe, and rate and review the podcast on whatever platform. If you have any book recommendations or questions for us, you can email us at fullybookedcalfpod@gmail.com. Don't send us emails about kink shaming. We're not kink shaming. We're not. I just don't need to hear about it. Okay. Also, be sure to follow us on TikTok and Instagram at fullybookedcalfpod to see our upcoming reads. Thanks for checking us out. And remember,
if you need us, we're fully booked.
Bye. Bye.